Last week, you heard the story of Bindu, a young woman from Sierra Leone who witnessed some of the horrors of that country's civil war. Coming up, we'll hear some of your reactions to that story. But first, days before the war ended in 2002, the Special Court for Sierra Leone was established by the United Nations and the government of Sierra Leone. The court recently convicted three leaders of a rebel group of crimes against humanity. They will be sentenced in the coming weeks. Stephen Rapp is the prosecutor for the court, and he joins us in the studio. Welcome to the program.
Good to be here, Leanne.
Give us a thumbnail sketch. Who were these men? What did they do?
These three men were the senior surviving leaders of the Revolutionary United Front, the group that began the Civil War with, in our view, the assistance of Charles Taylor in 1991, but the group that was responsible for the greatest number of atrocities, for tens of thousands of murders, thousands of cases of mutilation, and a campaign of terror against the civilian population, characterized also by widespread crimes against women. It's the first conviction in the history of the world for forced marriage as a crime against humanity, the first conviction for attack on peacekeepers.
This court seems to be setting a certain amount of precedent for international law. I mean, it's the first court of its kind. What are some of the other precedents it's setting?
Well, it's particularly in this whole area of command responsibility, of holding leaders responsible. I spent 6 years at the Rwanda Tribunal. I prosecuted the media trial there of RTLM. We had some successes on rape and gender violence, but we had much greater difficulty holding leaders responsible, even when rape and gender violence was part of the campaign. Judges were reluctant to hold leaders responsible, thinking that these were the acts of soldiers kind of run amok. And that, frankly, doesn't tell the story. These gender crimes are part of the campaign, part of the way in which a group is destroyed, and part of the way is arguably that soldiers are rewarded is through these crimes, which are very much a part of strategy. So we've been able to go beyond what's been done at the Rwanda Tribunal and the Yugoslavia Tribunal in that regard. We're present at the scene of the crime, trying all our cases except the case of Charles Taylor, where the crimes happened in West Africa, in Sierra Leone, sometimes within earshot or view of where thousands were murdered or amputated.
Tell us more about the ongoing trial of Liberia's Charles Taylor. I know he's accused of backing some of the rebels, but can you elaborate on that?
Well, our allegation against him is that he was really the effective leader of the RUF. We presented 91 witnesses, 30 of them linking Taylor to the crimes on the ground, and about 50 witnesses who testified to the victimization.
This is an organization that's funded by voluntary contributions, and you've said that you're very concerned about how the financial crisis will affect the court. Can you explain?
Well, we have to get money from governments. We're not UN. We have to have the contributions, or it could interrupt our trial. The defense could move for bail or release if somehow things were interrupted. We've got to have the resources, and that's why I was here in Washington. Fortunately, there was $9 million in the appropriations bill that passed Congress, which, if we get that on time, may allow us to continue without interruption. I could have the best proof and the best advocacy, but if the court doesn't have the resources, we don't succeed.
So Charles Taylor could walk free?
Well, that would be the last thing in the world we'd ever want. Most of us would work for free in order to prevent that eventuality, but it's not something that will happen automatically. It's not the UN tomorrow handing us some money. It's a matter of various states, and obviously when you've got economic crises and problems within national borders, there's a necessary requirement to deal with those problems. But at the same time, the Taylor case is very important. I'm asked constantly these days, because of the arrest warrant against Omar al-Bashir, what's going to happen with that?
And is in Sudan.
Yeah, in Sudan. And I say, look at Milosevic. No one thought he would ever be arrested. And when we indicted Taylor and tried to arrest him in Accra, everyone thought that was an outrageous thing to do. And he was allowed to go into a safe and comfortable exile when he faced overthrow in his own country. But eventually, the world didn't tolerate that. The expectation is that there has to be accountability to people at the highest level. And so within 3 years of his indictment. He was being helicoptered into the detention facility of the court in Freetown. Taylor, we think we can finish a trial in 2 years, do it as a model of international justice, show that you can arrest these people, convict them in a fair trial if the evidence is there. But as we win these cases, we begin to send a message that if you commit these crimes, you can face consequences. And in the past, the rule was impunity. Kill one man, good chance you'd be arrested and tried in any national system. Kill 10,000, and you may stay in power or have a safe and comfortable exile somewhere. That's changed, but it won't stop everything. But it will begin to deter these crimes, and individuals like those in Sierra Leone or in some other place won't have their hands lopped off, short sleeves, long sleeves. They won't be subject to being raped or turned into sex slaves. They'll have a chance to live and prosper without that kind of fear of violence.
Stephen Rapp is the prosecutor of the Special Court for Sierra Leone. The court was established to prosecute those accused of committing war crimes during the country's decade-long civil war. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.